Thank you all so much for coming on this beautiful day. The speakers, the volunteers, the paid helpers, and to all of you who make these events as lively as they are. I think those of you who know me know that I'm always persuaded that I'm going to show up and no one's going to be here. So we really count on you to come, so thank you for that. And more specifically to the season, I'll say to Shana Tova and in anticipation of Eid Mubarak. And I'll say a few more words about the season, just a little bit describe what exactly we're talking about from the Jewish perspective. And then I'll introduce our speakers. But first, I want to thank the people who it's my job to thank, at least. Chris Moreland for working so hard to make sure this happens. And Glennis Lam, who's our behind-the-scenes techie. Thank you. So obviously, by the end of today, you'll know a lot more about what is meant by the sacred season in Judaism and Islam, but I just want to start off by saying that what we're talking about from the Jewish perspective is the 10 days before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which is called though we kind of added in the festival of Sukkot so that there would be a parallel with Islamic pilgrimage around this time. But basically, we're talking about what's called the 10 days of repentance. And I want to maybe make something, a somewhat surprising argument that this, even though this is the most sacred season in the Jewish calendar, it's not about Jews. It's most Jewish holidays have, let's say, a combined agricultural national dimension. So they're both about the season in the sense of the agricultural season, and they're about Jewish history, and usually in the sense of Exodus. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not about that. So even though they're important Jewish holidays, they're important Jewish holidays insofar as Jews are, on the one hand, witnesses to the amazing thing that is our universe. So they're, the universe is, this is basically, Rosh Hashanah is the birthday of the universe. And also as individuals, the Yom Kippur is one of those holidays in which it is not your identity as a Jew that counts, but your identity as an individual mortal. So the dimensions of these two holidays and the kind of temporal drama that's produced by this movement from Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is both ultimately cosmic and supremely individual. And to put it slightly differently, Rosh Hashanah, the repeated refrain of Rosh Hashanah is Hayom Harat Olam, and sometimes in prayer books that's translated as today is the creation of the world. We go back to ground zero. We set our odometer to zero again in some religious psychic sense. But the actual literal meanings are today is the birthing day of the world. The experience of Rosh Hashanah is the experience of the universe as a newborn creation. The pinkness and newness and shininess of the universe is what's experienced on Rosh Hashanah. And then in just a mere 10 days, the temporal existential experience of Yom Kippur is one of death. Obviously, we know probably most of you will not die on Yom Kippur. We rehearse our deaths on Yom Kippur. We wear white as the shroud. We meditate on our mortality. Sometimes, and why is this? Why do we do this from life to death so quickly? What is the, I think, the kind of genius of religion to create this kind of intensified movement from the beginning to the end in a way that's so fast and so intense? And right now we're, let's say, in late middle age of this particular, it's lifespan of a fruit fly. And it's because I think we say life is short, but we forget that life is short in the everydayness of our going about our lives as if we have all the time in the world. And what always occurs to me when I say that is that I have a friend I borrowed a book from 5 years ago that's sitting on my desk, and it's taken me this long. I have 3 days to get it in before this Yom Kippur. We need deadlines. Yom Kippur is a deadline. It's a deadline that focuses the mind. The world is new, and yet we are mortal within it. It's the lifetime, the universe is, whether you want to say it's 570-something years old or 13 billion, it's still enormous in relation to our individual time. And far from it being the case that we're always aware of that, we're not sufficiently aware of that. And I think one way of understanding this period is to draw that contrast between the eternal and the mortal. And that's the sacred season as I understand it. I'm very glad I got to say it in 10 minutes. I'd just say the other part of my job is to introduce the first two speakers, and we're going to have the first two speakers, and then the second two speakers. Munir will introduce the second two speakers, since he's better acquainted with them, even though I know them both. Yes?
Can I ask one question only?
Yes, please.
Since you talk about the end of life,
yes.
Is that a Jewish concept? Because I have met a lot of Jewish friends. Everybody has got different interpretations. Is there life after death?
So let's just say that the question of whether Jews believe in life after death is an excellent one. And sometimes if you're a skeptic, as I am, you think the purpose of religion is to reassure you that you're not going to really die because you'll come back, etc., etc. That may be true, and it may be true for some strands of Judaism, but in the moment of Yom Kippur, whatever you believe about life after death, the terror and the immediacy and the intensity of mortality is there for all of us. The notion of life after death is not the religious comfort of Yom Kippur. It may exist elsewhere in the religious imagination. The terror of mortality is faced head on Yom Kippur. If you're not feeling it in your synagogue, you're not going to the right synagogue. That's the mood. So thank you for that question. I know I felt it in my childhood, and no one was saying, don't worry, you know, yeah, you'll be underground for a little while, then you'll get up and everything will be cool. That's not why we put on the shroud. But thanks for that question. So to introduce the first speaker, we're so lucky in the Bay Area to have Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb join us. I know it's not because of us, it's because of her son. But what a welcome addition. I know some of you are already her disciples, and there should be many thousands more. Lynn Gottlieb is one of the first, she just told me she's one of the first 8 women to become rabbis in Jewish history. So to have her with us is a blessing in that regard. She has also started recently, I think, a rabbinical school called Shomeret Shalom, which is dedicated to creating a Jewish culture of nonviolence in a global age. So we just want you to know that you are so welcome here at the GTU.
Thank you.
Always. So I'm very interested to hear what you have to say. Let me just introduce Trish so I don't have to stop this. So then Trish Hellman Gibbs, who I'm also extraordinarily happy to have here today. She's one of our own, a CJS graduate, who came here and decided to study, after 9/11 decided that what she wanted to do was study her own religious tradition, Judaism, but also to immerse herself in the study of Islam. In the time that she was here, she studied Hebrew, Arabic, Judeo-Arabic, and then using these primary languages, immerse herself in the works of the Jewish philosopher Maimonides, to understand what it was that Maimonides got from Jewish sources and what he got from Islamic sources. And I could talk about this for a long time because I remember it very well, but I won't. I don't know if you will. But she says to me that she's always been very interested in that charged and rich border between religions and between peoples. So it's, I think, entirely appropriate that we have Trish speaking today. I'll also say that among her many, many accomplishments, which I won't list them all, she's not only a doctor who works full-time as a doctor, but also the founder of the San Francisco, and I think major supporter of the San Francisco Free Clinic. And as if that were not enough, she also tells me that she's been studying Torah every day. I don't know, in her much free time. So thank you very much. We're talking about time. This is our meditation of the day is time. So I'll try to be short, and I'll just now introduce my dear colleagues. Let me just say, I'll point out that we're very fortunate to have Reese Potterveld here with us. Do you want to stand up and maybe
meet
the president of the GTU? We're so lucky to have him. My colleague Dean Aronoff was sitting there a second ago. Okay, she's here, I know somewhere. And then my colleague, and all these are also dear friends, Munir Jiwa, the director of the Center for Islamic Studies.